The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Mercy Sua. In the headlines, suspected killer of Member of Parliament for Ebreakwan North confesses to killing him. African First Ladies pledge to end new HIV infections among adolescents. GES to review computerized school selection placement system to address inefficiencies. National Communications Authority denies claims of fraud in selection process for Interconnect Exchange and Financial Clearinghouse license. And opposition MPs in South Africa thrown out of Parliament for heckling President Zuma. The man arrested by the police in connection with the murder of the Ebreakwan North MP, Joseph Bwachi Dankwa-Edu, has reportedly confessed to committing the crime. A source at the regional police command told the Daily Graphic, the suspect whose identity is being protected for now, confessed to police interrogators that he stabbed the MP. Three mobile phones were retrieved, two of them belonging to the slain MP. The third phone, according to the Graphic, is password protected. The suspect is currently at the Accra Regional Police Command being questioned. Two other persons were picked up in connection with the killing. The police are still on the hunt for the arrest of other suspects. Police investigation showed the MP suffered two stab wounds, one to his rib and the other to his abdomen. The wife of the MP was said to be in another room when the incident occurred. Five people, including a security man, the driver, and some others at the residence, were picked up by the police to help with investigations. The suspect is believed to be an ex-convict who benefited from the Justice for All program. The precincts of Parliament is not safe for MPs to work. The Minister Designate for the Interior, Prosper Douglas Bani, made the observation when he appeared before the Appointments Committee of Parliament for his vetting. With the murder of their colleague this week, the MPs wanted to know whether the nominee thinks MPs should be provided personal security. Mr. Bani said his cursory look at the security situation at Parliament so far revealed several breaches.
I think that all the three arms of government are very important, and they deserve, those working within those arms have to be secured. With respect to the security details of honorable members of parliament, I would like to have an engagement with the leadership at one point and very soon to discuss the options available. We need to begin to work together. And I will give you one example of an observation I have made for MPs to be aware that even as a teacher, I'm concerned, very concerned about their security. I have driven into this house or this compound several times. On no occasion has anyone stopped my vehicle, checked my vehicle, and asked me where I am going to. This morning I drove into this compound on two occasions. I drove up to the entrance of the 600, turned around, and went to my holding place to prepare. No one asked me anything. I think that if given the opportunity to serve, one of the first actions I will take is to work with leadership to secure Parliament House.
Mr. Bani also commented on the hosting of Guantanamo former detainees by the country. He said Ghanaians need to trust the president's rationale for taking them in.
The Gitmo situation has been discussed. The president has explained as to why the decisions were taken, and that the threat around the two Gitmo persons in our country have been reduced to the extent that the risk to our citizens as at this moment is being minimized. So while I personally read in the newspapers, listened to commentaries, and appreciated the concern of our brothers and sisters, the system by itself has responded sufficiently to the threat associated with any of such actions, and I believe our brothers and sisters should be assured that the risk involved may be getting to very low levels.
Minister for the Interior Designate Prosper Douglas Dani. The former chief of staff was also quizzed on the Fulani herdsmen menace, use of small arms, activities of political party vigilante groups, and his plans for the police, prisons, fire service and other bodies he'll oversee when approved. The Eastern Regional Minister nominee, Mavis Amafrimpong, also appeared before the committee. She was questioned on issues such as illegal mining, educational and agricultural challenges, roads, as well as tourism and security in the region. She told the committee that when given the nod, she'll endeavor to package the industrial potential of the region and seek investment to enhance the economy. Mrs. Frimpong, who is current deputy regional minister, said she's comfortable with where the University for Environment and Sustainable Development is being sited in the region.
I'm very comfortable with where it's been cited. And as you could recall, the president stated that the main campus is going to be in Somanya, then at Farm Plains, and any other area within the region. So Oforidia can also be considered for any of the campuses that is going to be cited. I would also want to add by saying that with the president's agenda of changing the polytechnics to Technical University, Oforidia Polytechnic is one of the first institutions that is going to be turned into university. So already we're going to have a university in Oforidia, the capital city of my region.
That was Eastern Regional Minister Designate Mavis Amafrimpong speaking at the Appointments Committee's public hearing in Parliament. The Public Relations Officer of the Ashanti
FM stations have condemned the raid.
He said about 40 people who tried to go on the rampage last night have been picked up by the police. Mr. Kegre said anyone who refuses to follow RegSec directives in respect of the curfew will be dealt with accordingly.
It does not necessarily presuppose that the situation is getting worse, but it goes to confirm that the measure or the decision taken by the Ashanti Regional Security Council to impose curfew is a measure that is working. The curfew imposed at Kafo is one of the measures that Regional Security Council has decided to use in order to bring peace and sanity to the vicinity and the area of consideration. People can go about their duties without having to worry about their safety and security.
So what are the curfew hours?
The curfew hours as put out is 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. Let me put on record that the Regional Security Council decided after the meeting to visit the place under consideration after paying a courtesy call on the chief of Tafo to find out at first hand what really the situation is on the ground. And I can tell you that intelligence picked from the field suggests that it has become more compelling, if not demanding, for the curfew to continue. If at a point in time RegSec is convinced that there is the need for the curfew to relax, the directives will be issued to the public.
What has been the response of the people in Old Tafo so far with regards to the curfew?
The people, I should say, are complying to the directive issued by the RegSec.
You heard PR of the Ashanti Regional Coordinating Council, Clement Kegri, talking to George Asikri on Behind the News. Meanwhile, the Zongo chief of Old Tafu, Alhaji Seydou Chipsa, says the incident that happened there was unfortunate. He said the clash is the first to take place since they settled in the Old Tafu township. The chief said tempers are too high in the town and called for cool heads to prevail. Alhaji Chipsa said the Zongo community is ready to sit with the Tafu traditional authorities to settle the impasse. He said Zongo communities are settlers and therefore cannot claim ownership of the parcel of land in question.
Very unfortunate, I would say. Unexpected, because this is the first time we are having such a behavior of our youth in Tafu. I was very much disappointed because I've made efforts to reach them, but all in vain.
Have they complained to you in the past that they have a problem with the said land?
None. All we have told them is that we know the limits of our cemetery, and we have erected pillars. These pillars were erected early 2002. And before that, we had put in wooden pillars, which were eaten by the ants and the rest. So we are surprised that they are now saying the boundary of our cemetery is different from what we know.
Who are the D? Is it the youth?
The group.
The group in Zongo community, you mean?
It's actually not Zongo community alone. It's a group that is making the fence.
Oh, okay.
Which consists of, according to them, people from Kumasi, Asubasi, Abu Abu, and then some boys in Tafo.
So does it mean that because tempers are high, even as chief of the community, you are unable to talk to the young men there?
I very much appreciate the strategy adopted by the Regional Security Council. At this moment, what we need is to stabilize the situation. And this is exactly what they are doing. When the situation is stabilized, then we sit down and talk rationally.
Chief of Zongo community in Old Tafo, Alhaji Seydou Chipsa, talking to George Asikri. African First Ladies attending a conference on sexual health rights in Accra have pledged to do all they can to end new infections of HIV among adolescents within the shortest possible time. To achieve this feat, they have, among other things, pledged to intensify advocacy and also impress on their government to allocate resources for the provision of comprehensive sexual and reproductive health services for adolescents at the launch of an agenda dubbed United Continental All in Adolescent HIV campaign. The First Ladies also embossed their signatures on a banner to show their full support for the campaign, a report by Yvonne Atilegu.
New infections of HIV among adolescents is now the new trend, threatening the success story of eliminating the spread of HIV and AIDS. Statistics show that every hour in Africa, 26 adolescents aged between 10 and 19 are infected with HIV, leading to an estimated 250,000 new infections in Africa alone. Girls and women are therefore the most vulnerable. The situation, according to the First Ladies, is worrying and calls for serious attention and action. First Lady Lordina Mahama, who is also the president of the Organization of African First Ladies Against HIV and AIDS, WAFLA, said there is a need to demand that government take action and make issues of HIV among adolescents a continental issue which needs urgent attention.
We need to stop new HIV infections among adolescents, especially our young women, and ensure AIDS is no longer the leading cause of death among that age group. We are committed to realizing these actions across the entire African continent. As president of OFLA, and with the support of my sister First Lady, we will intensify our advocacy. We also need all partners and stakeholders on board now. For too long, this area of intervention has suffered neglect by partners on the scale that is required.
First Ladies of Mali, Mozambique, Gabon, Sierra Leone and the others gave a rundown of what they will be doing more in their quest to end new infections of HIV among adolescents. Apart from mobilizing resources, they also pledged to empower adolescents as leaders and actors of social change and also place adolescents HIV firmly on the political agenda to spur concrete action. The First Lady of Sierra Leone, Mrs. Sia Kuruma, made a significant point and urged all other First Ladies to support.
In the work of UNAIDS, our aim should be to spur concrete action and mobilize resources and lead our country to zero new HIV infections, zero discrimination, and zero AIDS-related. I will transmit your heartfelt message to My Excellency, the President of Sierra Leone, in which, with a collective voice, you have called on me to grant a presidential assent and follow this into law, the State Abortion Bill 2016 that has recently been passed by Sierra Leone's parliament.
Two adolescents who are leading the campaign in their schools also added their voice to the calls of the First Ladies.
We can reach almost all the population within a short time in relation to Ebola. Is it not possible for us to do the same with the message on HIV? Yes, we can.
A lot of things about this scenario deeply. Where will the 10-year-old be by the time that Agenda 2063 of the Africa Union may be attained? Where will the 10-year-old be by 2030 when we are supposed to earn the sustainable development goals? Without doubt, that 10-year-old would be an adult who should actively be contributing towards the sustainable development agenda of the continent. What if that 10-year-old is left to suffer from HIV and AIDS? We would have hurt our progress and impaired our development. We are talking about a dire situation, and any intervention meant to arrest the dire situation should be supported on all fronts.
Meanwhile, a communique adopted by the First Ladies reaffirmed their commitment to end new infections of HIV among adolescents, stop mother-to-child transmission of HIV, and championing an end to child marriages.
Yvonne Atilego reporting. The Minority Caucus in Parliament has asked government to reflect and reconsider provisions in the Government of Ghana, GNPC, and ENI Vitol Gas Agreement to ensure that Ghana derives maximum benefit from the deal. According to the caucus, a critical appraisal of the terms and conditions of the agreement reveals what it termed a horror tale of poor negotiations. The Minority Caucus said this at a news conference in Parliament yesterday. A member of the Mines and Energy Committee, William Orekwedu, who echoed the sentiments of the caucus, said the terms of the agreement are skewed against Ghana. He observed that the considerations that went into the agreement are lopsided, shoddy, and appalling. For more, here's a report by Dominic Lodgy and Augustus Akwe from Parliament.
In December 2014, Parliament okayed the Ghana GNPC and Eni Vitol Gas Agreement for the fiscal support and security package in respect of the development of the Sankofa and Jinyame oil and gas project. The House approved the deal under a certificate of urgency, as it was stated that Ghana may lose out if the ratification of the agreement delays. Addressing the parliamentary press call, a member of the Mines and Energy Committee, an MP for Ifijakwabre South, William Orekwedu, said the negotiators for the state did not have the requisite competence to deal with the contractors, adding that given the enormity of the matter, some corruption might have influenced the negotiators to enter into such a bad agreement. He said over the contract period, the contractors will make an after-tax working interest of $14.3 billion, while Ghana will be receiving $11.1 billion. He spoke on the issues.
Financial terms, ENI Vitol of 20% return on investment instead of the normal 12.5% is an unusually high rate for a commercial transaction of this nature, especially as GNPC and government assume all the risk in the project. That is what the MPP have stated. The response from the Minister Kofi Amamuya is bizarre, to say the least. He says the rate of return is less than 12.5%. The Minister insisted that ENI did not include their past costs on the investment. That statement is hardly trivial. Another of the overgenerous concessions that the state has offered to ENI Vitol in the agreement is in the area of tax incentives, which Ghana is required to provide to the tune of at least $125 million. GNPC is obligated to additional upfront cash payment of $125 million in order to bail out the contractors in the event of a shortfall in revenue. In other words, the government is compelled to pay
to James Averji.